It's the Podmatic Podcast for June 17th, 2015.
It's Father's Day, and I got my cake.
Oh my God!
Happy Father's Day!
My life is complete.
Pop Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today... Oh, I have a question.
No.
Is it confused. Grammatically correct for me to say, I am Brian, and joining me today is... Or is it grammatically correct for me to say, I am Brian, and joining me today are...
R.
I thought it was R.
It's R. I think it's R.
Is it singular?
Because if you wrote it, it would be R, because like, because you would say they...
Yeah, it's
if it was just Jeremy, it would be is. But if it's four of us, it was our.
But I think the confusion comes because you're saying it aloud.
Fascinating.
Cool story, bro. I am
Good
Brian.
Good question.
I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Bill.
Amanda.
Mike.
Daddy.
Whoa.
Tell my daddy.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Papa.
I don't know if I want to call you daddy, buddy.
Everyone here...
Jeremy.
Everyone here had a dad, even me, who was a bubble boy. So in honor of dads everywhere, this is the Father's Day episode, if you didn't gather that already. If you got a dad, give him a call. If your dad was a loser, send him one of those snarky e-cards. If you want to spend more time with your father and you don't know how, take him to the library, sign him up for a library card, and then wait for him to call you about how to download an e-book.
It'll happen.
First of all, I'd like to say, hey, Dad, thanks for listening to the podcast.
Woo. Hi, Mike's dad.
Thanks, Mike's dad.
Well, I was going to talk about an awesome movie, but Jeremy claimed it. That jerk. So
I'm talking about the book.
At least got the comic book, you know, original version of it, you know. So, like, of course, because he's Jeremy.
Because he's a good dad.
Right.
He's like, this is the original.
Yeah.
This is the cool source version.
You're going to grow up to be a geek that's on a podcast.
That's right.
For sure.
So instead, I'll talk today about Justified, which is about U.S. Deputy Marshal Raylan Givens, played by Timothy Oliphant of Deadwood and the Hitman movie, which is actually pretty good. I like it. In the pilot episode, he anchors some gangsters in Miami and is reassigned to Harlan, Kentucky. He's born and raised there and is quite irate at having to return. See, his father, Arlo, has been a selfish, two-bit criminal his whole life. Disgusted with his father and his criminal ways, Raylan left as a teenager to become a lawman. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's implied that he left Harlan more because of a divorce with his ex-wife there, court reporter Winona. The other main character is Boyd Crowder, a white supremacist who gains religion after his latest stint in prison. This puts him in opposition with his father, Beau, a local crime boss. One of the things I really like about the series is the evolution of Boyd Crowder, because in the beginning I couldn't wait for Raylan to shoot him in the face. He was so annoying. Ugh. But now that I'm watching season 5, I couldn't imagine the show without him. He has this way of talking that my granny calls using $10 words. Very, like, big, you know, felicitations. You know, kind of. And this syrupy southern drawl filled with menace that I quite like. The series follows a kind of Soprano-style formula, with the exception of one or two seasons I had, where each season follows, like, a big bad guy who tries to take over Harlan. One of the best ones is Margot Martindale, who plays Mags Bennett, was probably, like, the best one. She's kind of like a sweet grandmother who would quickly turn a dime to become creepy and menacing. You know, don't accept any drinks from her, is what I'm saying. She won an Emmy for the role. Yeah. Father-son dynamic in the show I really like. Unlike a lot of badasses with daddy issues, Raylan is pretty open about his loathing of his father. He's not, like, you know, seeking his approval or anything. And very rarely softens his position. And Arlo is very open about how much he manipulates everyone around him to further his own interests, including his son and wife and, you know, friends and stuff. And I know at one point he tries to kill Raylan, which is hilarious. Yeah, who then gleefully throws him in prison. Take that, Dad. Not my dad, I mean.
My dad. Yeah, don't get rid of our one listener. Yeah,
well, let's really work through your issues now.
Gary from Perth.
We're really getting somewhere.
It's not high art or anything, but I think part of the appeal, at least for me, is it's like a pulpier modern-day version of Deadwood. Oh, Deadwood. Take me away. Every week I would recommend Deadwood. Longer Creep Show, but alas.
Deadwood, take me away.
Oh. It's the best.
It's like Calgon, but...
Yeah. A little more shooting and,
And whores.
The C word.
Yeah, I was about to say, what was Swarthington's favorite word?
I cannot say.
Cactus. Cattle rustler.
So many C words to choose from.
He uses dude in the original sense, which is quite funny, because... It references something that I cannot say on a family-friendly podcast.
What do you say, dude?
Terrible segue. What have you got, Amanda?
I don't know how to follow that. So I have no idea how I came about the book that I'm going to talk about today. There had to be, a review somewhere or something, because this isn't really an author that I've ever read, nor is a topic that I would pursue. But somehow I read it, and now I want to share it with you. And I didn't mean that to rhyme, but it worked out nicely. So anyway, today I'm going to talk about a book called This Is Where I Leave You. It is written by Jonathan Troper. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, wait, wasn't that a movie that came out not too long ago? Why, yes. Yes, it was.
3 months ago, I had a great job and a nice apartment, and I was in love with my wife.
When?
No.
How long?
A year.
The first time.
And we will get to it, but first we're going to talk about the book. So the basic premise is a Jewish family of three brothers and one sister comes home for their father's funeral, and they haven't really been overly religious in the past, but this time their mother instructs them that they are going to sit Shiva for their father. So this is not to be confused with the Hindu god Shiva. In Hebrew...
Oh, Shiva and Shiva. Okay. I mean...
It's spelled the same, though.
Snob card, I guess.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Uh-huh. Yeah, spelled the same. But in Hebrew, Hindu, Shiva means...
Card.
Jeez, dude.
I was going to explain. So Shiva means seven in Hebrew, and it's traditionally a week-long mourning period in Judaism for first-degree relatives, like wives, daughters, nephews, uncles, cousins, brothers, whatever. So this date lasts 7 days, during which family members traditionally gather in one home, in this case at mom's house, and they all sit down, people come see them, and they tell stories, and it's kind of like the Irish wake, but longer. So in the story, over the course of the 7 days, a lot of family issues get worked out with a double dose of anger, love, and some tears. And when I was reading the book, I kept thinking to myself, why are you still reading this? The family was completely dysfunctional, but it was also clear that they loved each other, so I didn't want to give up on them too quickly. So I finished the book, turned it back in, went on with my life, and I, not really too moved by the resolution of events. And then the movie came out.
3 months ago, I had a great job and a nice apartment, and I was in love with my wife.
When?
No.
How long?
A year.
The first time.
On our sides.
Hello.
I imagine by now you are well into the excessive facial hair phase of your depression.
It's not a good time, Wendy.
Dad's dead.
What?
Hi, sis.
Mommy.
What's different about her?
The boobs. She had a little touch-up.
Your father had one final request, and we are going to honor it.
He just wanted his kids under one roof.
So for the next 7 days, you are all grounded.
Hey. What? Oh, no, we're just sitting in an awkward silence.
Whoops, we come apart there. Mom, close that robe.
It's just breasts, Judd. Same ones you suckled at.
No, Mother, those are not the same breasts you nursed us with. You got bionic breasts now.
Judd Altman, what's it been, 7, 8, 9 years?
What happened to Quinn? You guys didn't split up, did you?
She slept with my boss.
Well, that'll do it.
Yes, it did.
Done.
Right. Is it the whole world, or is it just his family?
You need to put a baby in that woman, like, yesterday. Have you had your man parts checked? Since you may have emptied them over the years. My room is next to yours. My room is next to yours.
This is the guy that slept with my wife.
Who are you coming here?
I'm Wendy Altman, bitch! Yeah, that's a princess cut!
You guys are idiots, but you're my idiots.
We made love on our first date.
Mom.
I don't mind telling you, the man was hung.
That should have been the headstone.
Clearly, she lost more than a husband.
Starting over is complicated, and you don't do complicated, Judd. You never have. Anything can happen. Anything happens all the time.
Yeah! I've been chasing this idea about a perfect life.
Yeah!
But life is unpredictable and irrational and complicated. And I want a complicated life. I'm just trying to get home.
I left the baby monitor on upstairs.
Oh, there we go. There.
Turn it off.
Turn it up.
Oh,
turn it up.
Stick a baby in there, Paul. Shove a baby up there.
It's a circle of life, everybody. Let's go, Altmans. I'm just trying to get
home. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's that crazy book about a funeral. And the movie star Jason Bateman, who I like, as the main brother, Judd, and Tina Fey, who I really love, as his sister. The mother is played by Jane Fonda, who I appreciate.
In that movie, okay.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, okay.
And then Connie Britton, who, you know, back to love,
yeah.
Who shows up as the youngest brother's love interest. And Dax Shepard is also in it, who he's husband to Veronica Mars, so I have to love him. and he also gets honorable mention as the guy who sleeps with Judd's wife. So I had to watch it, you know, just for the fabulous casting. And this may be one of the rare instances where I think the movie is better than the book, because I kind of expected the movie to be weird, like the book was kind of weird. But I was watching it, and I kept thinking, man, I really like this. And, you know, it's good, it's funny, but it's not. It's poignant, but it's not. And it's got all the good things you want in a movie, except maybe Bruce Willis blowing something up. Because I don't think he's Jewish, so he'll be the next one. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the film, and I kind of want to go watch it again.
The movie being better than the book, that's the pop culture platypus. Rare animal, but it does
exist.
Rare, but...
Yeah.
I thought, just on the same tip, the movie Election was better than the book.
Well, the movie that Bill's going to mention... It's way better than the book.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I haven't read the book. Of
There's a segue for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mike. Bill, what do you have?
Well, just a brief mention. The writer, Jonathan Trooper, also co-created the Cinemax television show Banshee. Mm. And we have the first two seasons, if you're interested in that, on DVD. But I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. And, of course, I'm talking about the Godfather saga, written by Mario Puzo and based on his best-selling novel.
Which stinks.
According to Social Media Mike.
Also co-written and directed by Francis Ford Coppola. And not to veer too much, but Coppola really didn't want to do the movie at all because he did not like the book. And he said, well, I can maybe work out something with the father and the three sons and... Well, he made this movie, and I know I've talked about The Godfather before on the wedding segment, but I want to talk about it again for Father's Day. In all Godfather movies, the head of the family is the first Don Vito Corleone, and then his son, Michael Corleone. They're heads of their own family, the Corleone crime family. And what I find fascinating in Don Corleone, both father and son, both men love their families, but... They are the undoing of them too. Sins of the father, in which one generation passes the sins of the father to the next generation. In The Godfather 2, there is a scene that best expresses this. In the Little Italy segment, the young Vito Corleone, played by Robert De Niro, assassinates Don Finucci in a graphic detail. And after this, he walks back to his family, picks up his young son, Michael Corleone, and says, "Your father loves you, Michael. He seals his son's fate forever." Michael Corleone is a tragic character because he knows what his father is doing wrong, but he does it himself anyway, condemning his own family. So have a cheery Father's Day. And check out all three Godfather movies. That'd be the perfect Father's Day for me. And so hand off to Jeremy.
All right.
Oh, you're really happy Father's Day. Father.
Scenario
so far. Happy Father's Day. Of course, the thing from Creepshow that we always quote is like pretty horrendous too. I guess the father does get his revenge.
He gets revenge
in that
he
clip.
Gets cake.
He gets cake. He does.
I can't wait to have my revenge.
Now's your chance.
I'm gonna
knives
throw,
out.
Throw you under the bus, 5 year old, almost five year old.
Oh, I thought you were going to get revenge on Mike.
Yeah, you're
going
to get revenge on me.
Your poor son.
Oh,
you can smack me.
I didn't know you were going to go Babadook.
I decided to not talk about the thing I was going to talk about and just go off book. So Mike,
and this is my shot.
This
face.
Is me.
It's okay. You can talk about whatever you like. I've got the thing I saved, so maybe in a year I can like mention it for the next Father's Day segment.
I've never talked about something twice on the podcast.
Hello. having a child is a wonderful, life-changing experience, but it makes things very hard, especially if you're a master swordsman and the shogun's executioner. In the classic manga Lone Wolf and Cub, Ogami Ito is forced to shed his honor and follow the path of the assassin after his wife is murdered. He's left with only his son, Daigoro, and a desire for vengeance. And together, the Lone Wolf and his cub plot their revenge against the Yagyu clan. This is a massive, epic story. It was written by Kazuo Koiki and illustrated by Goseki Kojima. And published originally from 1970 to 1976. It came to the U.S. in 1987. It was sort of at the leading edge of the first wave of manga, which came to the U.S. Then it was sort of, I mean, maybe my first exposure to Japanese comics, even though shortly after that I thought it was all Sailor Moon and winking and cats and giggling, or porn, which
in
is
my
what
section,
my other friend was
it was
into.
All Dragon Ball Z,
yeah,
which I could never get into.
No, me either.
But,
me
know,
either.
That's another podcast.
But it was championed by Frank Miller, who it was a big influence on his work, and the original covers of the U.S. editions had covers by Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz, who is the greatest artist in the world. And Dark Horse Comics picked up the reins and published a complete story in 28 tiny, tiny, tiny little paperback books.
Oh, they reissued them recently and really thick.
Oh, good.
Too. I bought the first thing.
Are they a little bigger? Yeah, at
they're much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much bigger.
The first comics.
Oh, yeah, they're really tiny. I remember that. Yeah.
Well, Capital F First Comics, the company that published them, they originally
a couple
did
inches.
Them. Yeah, they were like normal comic size, but they were square bound. It's called prestige format. But they never completed it, and then Dark Horse did it, and yeah, they're like these, almost like when the Gideons give you a Bible. It's like almost like a little bit bigger than that. It's kind of difficult to read, and the whole thing runs over 8,700 pages. So it's a massive, massive story, and super popular in Japan. There have been 7 films. Apparently there's an upcoming Hollywood remake. There was a TV series and even a video game. And then there was also a 2002 reimagining called Lone Wolf 2100, which was a sort of post-apocalyptic take on the story. The library owns the first 8 volumes of this series and several others sort of scattered around, so you have to fill in.
We own at least the first of the big combined one if you want to like read the first, I think, 4 or 5 regular ones and one big one.
Okay. And you can fill the holes via ILL. The story has lots of action, obviously, and intrigue, but there's also like this little baby accompanying his dad as he hacks off the limbs of samurai, and you're sort of wondering what this will do to him as he grows up over the course of 28 volumes. And so I wouldn't really look at it as a guidebook for being a parent. That is something, as a parent, I've never cared much for guidebooks, partially because my reading comprehension drops when I'm faced with instructions. And when my son was born, someone gave me a copy of Bill Cosby's Fatherhood that was fake autographed, and but that's not really a role model, so I'm going to stick with Lone Wolf and Cub.
To Jeremy, why don't you try one of my drinks sometime?
Yeah. Wow. Lone Wolf and Cub is a much better alternative because it shows the reader / parent inventive uses for both a baby and its many accessories. Why shouldn't a child be used as bait to lure your enemies? And why shouldn't a stroller be used as a means of escaping a trio of swordsmen? I think that's a perfectly legitimate use for those things. Because really, like, after a few months or a year, like, not only do you stop using the stroller, but like the baby loses its, you know, luster. So the lone father on a journey with his son narrative also brings to mind The Road. Now, I read that before my son was born, but from the moment I saw his head emerge, I knew that I would do anything to keep him safe from cannibals. However, I'm writing a fan fiction sequel to the book. It's coming soon to your favorite device. And the unnamed main character is not dead, and he eventually learns that things would be a lot easier if his kid were digesting in someone's belly rather than peeing all over things in the house, in the yard, and everywhere.
Oh, hey, you know, hey, gang. I went to bat this morning to get us to order Shogun Assassin, the movie that they combined the first 2 Lone Wolf and Cub movies into. It's incredibly violent. The plot makes no sense, but that doesn't matter. That's excellent. It's got a very great, it's got an amazing soundtrack. And on the DVD, there's an interview with Samuel L. Jackson for some reason.
What?
That's actually pretty neat. Like, he apparently owns over 1,000 like martial arts slash samurai movies.
Is this like from the 70s?
It came out in 1980.
Okay. Excellent.
It is violence-tastic.
I looked up some of the movies online.
Apparently, the difference, Animego released it in both dubbed and subtitle versions.
Uh-huh.
If you get the dubbed version, it's called A Shogun Assassin. Uh-huh. If you get the subtitle one, it's called Lone Wolf and Cub.
Oh. I looked up and like just some of the images from it, just the guy pushing the stroller. It's a great image, and I wanted to say, they're not on Netflix or anything?
No. Yeah. It's comically ultra mega violent.
I can't wait to watch it with my son.
Right, you don't let the cannibals eat him first.
That's, well, maybe.
You could hold them at bay with sharp implements from your bamboo baby carriage. So,
I am going to totally shift gears and play my librarian sissy card and bring us back into the realm of arts instead of the realm of over-the-top violence.
Fine.
So there's a personality cult around Jeff Buckley and his very soulful voice. But where did Jeff Buckley get that voice? Yep, you guessed it. His dad, Tim Buckley. And that is why Jeff Buckley, to me, will always just be Tim Buckley's kid.
Burn.
Ooh. Ooh.
Hallelujah.
Is this a snob card?
Wait, that's Leonard Cohen's song.
That was the
Jeff Buckley did.
Tim Buckley starts as a folk singer in the late 60s, and he earned a lot of critical success and a cult following, but he was one of these guys that just, like, refused to play the music business, refused to play the press game. So he always just had this sort of small cult following, you know, never really had chart success. If you own, like, maybe one record of sort of, like, trippy psychedelic folk, his record Happy Sad is one that I would recommend. But he also had musical tastes besides folk, and he hated being pigeonholed. He loved jazz and avant-garde composition. So later in his career, he starts to get more experimental. He wants to use his voice as an instrument, and then he really starts to open up the range of his voice. And his records more become about his exploration of his voice as an instrument, as opposed to just what people, I think, stereotypically think of as, like, folk records from the 60s. And his records, of course, are really hard to pin down, like what they actually are or sound like or put in a genre. And the one that's probably most typical of this is Star Sailor, which also includes the song Song to the Sirens, probably his most famous track. It's the song that the sailor sings to the siren after he's already been entrapped. It will turn your heart inside out.
Long afloatin' shipless oceans, I did all my best to smile till your singing eyes and fingers drew me loving to your eye, and you sang, sail to me. Sail to me, let me enfold you. Here I am, here I am, waiting to hold you.
So that's the studio version of the song, but the world first heard the song when Buckley performed it on the Monkees TV show.
And then,
of course, that version that he performed on the Monkees show was actually still when he was in this sort of commercial folk period. But the studio version, you know, it sounds different. I think it's very indicative of the shift in his career. Now, if you indulge me.
The song itself is perhaps more famous than Buckley's career. It's a very famous song. It's been covered many times. It's been covered by This Mortal Coil, and the vocals on that song are by Liz Fraser and Robin Guthrie of the Cocteau Twins. And David Lynch really, really wanted to use this song in Blue Velvet, and he couldn't get the rights to it. So instead, he got Angelo Badalamenti to write a sound-alike song, Mysteries of Love, which is all over the Blue Velvet soundtrack. They got Julie Cruise to do the vocal on that song, and that led to years of collaboration between Lynch and Badalamenti and Julie Cruise. Later, Lynch had enough money, I think, to buy the rights to whatever songs he wanted, and he put a song to the siren in Lost Highway. So it's in the famous Headlights in the Desert scene that you just have to watch to figure out where that song is. But I don't think he didn't get the rights to actually put it on the CD soundtrack, the soundtrack album that was released. So I guess you have to actually watch Lost Highway and listen to the song. The library has the DVD of Lost Highway. The library has the DVD and soundtrack to Blue Velvet.
The library also has Tim Buckley's entire discography on Hoopla. And on CD, we have an anthology called Morning Glory, which has the studio version and the Monkees TV show version of Song to the Siren. Check it out.
Just a little fun fact. Hal Ashby originally wanted Tim Buckley to play Woody Guthrie in Bound for Glory, but the studio said, no, we really would prefer you get an actor to finance this. So they got David Carradine.
Did he also die tragically like his son?
Oh, we did. We just avoided that.
Well.
He was trying to have one positive moment with father. You just wrecked it.
His son like drank himself to death and drowned in a river.
That's a country music song.
Jeff Buckley was like drunk and like fell in a river, right? And then Tim Buckley did the same thing.
What? Whoa. I mean, that's amazing.
The cannibals came.
That's rather a touchy music. And it's odd.
What's the magic number? 27. That you die at whenever you're a rock star.
27.
Well,
yeah, we have a whole book on the 27ers or something.
So Tim Buckley, I think, lived one more year. Mm. He died at 28 of a heroin overdose.
Oh, heroin, okay.
And at the time, his son Jeff Buckley was 8 years old, but Tim Buckley was a typical 60s rock star bag and didn't have anything to do with his son, even though the 8-year-old Jeff Buckley did come to Tim Buckley's funeral. And then Jeff Buckley died because he was swimming in the Mississippi River. He was recording his only recorded one proper studio album. He was recording a second album in Memphis. He went swimming in the Mississippi River and he got caught in a boat's wake and drowned.
Wow.
When I think he was 29 at the time.
Did he have a kid? Does the curse continue? Jim Buckley?
And, you know, they both had really great voices and they both were extremely good looking. Genetic replication for the win. Happy Father's Day.
Yep.
Yeah, what's the catchphrase?
Maybe the library owned it?
Maybe the library has it.
Maybe it doesn't.
Either way,
it's tickling our fancy.
Bill?
Okay.
I forgot the feminine name for it.
I think if we all do, I like that. I think
we scripted it.
It's weird, like Brian came up with it, yet we remember it really well.
Exactly. I think that was his plan.
Yeah, it's like an earworm.
He's completely
like,
genius plan.
Maybe I'll make it up, and then like, everyone will just make fun of it, and then somehow it'll get funny.
Then we'll remember it by making fun of me. That was his long-term goal.
Yeah. He is a master of the long con.
Tickling my fancy is Finders Keepers, a new book by the prolific Stephen King. Mm-hmm. This is a follow-up to his novel, Mr. Mercedes. I'm really enjoying it. I'm over halfway finished with the book, and I'll be finished by the end of the week. As a matter of fact, why am I doing this podcast? Reading Finders Keepers. I shouldn't be working because that's how it's a page-turner. We have both Mr. Mercedes and Finders Keepers in our collection. If you do not like horror stories that Mr. King's write, don't worry. These are detective stories or crime stories. As a matter of fact, Finders Keepers is dedicated to crime writer John D. McDonald. One more thing. If you're a King fan, put on hold Drunken Fireworks, a book on CD that Mr. King has published. This is not a book. He's just publishing it on CD. It's going to be on audio. The title, one more time, is called Drunken Fireworks. I do not know what it's about, but you can put it on hold now. I think it's due to be published in July. And that's it for my Tickling My Fancy. Amanda.
Okay, so one of my goals for this year is to work through my never-ending to-be-read pile, which lives on my Kindle and on my desk at work and under my TV at home. It will probably crush me someday if it continues
like
to grow.
That sounds like my to-be-read file, yeah.
But I think Crystal and Mike, I think you guys mentioned this as part of your Killer Thrillers book club, The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah, we read that about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so I've actually started listening to it recently, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm about halfway through, and I'm kind of like Bill. Like, I wish I was there reading it instead of sitting here talking about it. So when I last left, main character, lawyer Mickey Haller, he was talking to his ex-wife on the phone, but thinking there was someone hidden somewhere in his house. Will he save the day? Will his house burn down? Will I actually finish this book before it's due in 9 days? And if I do, will I continue the Mickey Haller series, even though there's like 6 more books? And will I like the movie, even though it stars Matthew McConaughey with a shirt?
So
stay tuned, listeners, for answers to this and many more questions.
Minus stars.
Hey, all right.
So Lincoln Lawyer, I'm enjoying it.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. Also part of Zimmer Challenge, to download an audio.
Where'd Jeremy's shirt go?
All right. Great thing about tickling my fancy, I keep getting tickled, they keep getting fancy.
See, I thought you were going to thank yourself for winning an Oscar, but, which was amusing. So today I've got two dad-like things to mention.
Two.
One, it was really bugging me, much like the cockroaches that burrowed into E.G. Marshall's elderly flesh, that we did not have the horror classic Creepshow. But now it's back in the collection, just in time for Father's Day.
Really?
Enjoy a piece of cake and a screwdriver and watch some Creepshow today. Second thing I was going to talk about, a piece of news that came out last week that excited me and my dad. Bethesda Softworks finally announced Fallout 4. All right. Fallout 3 was one of my favoriteest games of all time, as well as my dad's. This is weird to say.
It's weird to hear.
Fallout is set in a future much like that predicted in the 1950s with nuclear-powered cars, robots that look like Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet. But everything goes through a devastating nuclear war. Oh, you play as a, I like that it's both got this kind of cheesy 50s sci-fi tone mixed with horrific, like, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, monsters and mutants and stuff. You play as a person who's escaped a vault a couple of centuries in the irradiated future, left to wander the wastelands. Oh, boy. Dad and I exchanged a lot of excited texts throughout the workday last week. He says he might retire early. I say that I'll have to hire somebody to shove Cheetos in my mouth and change my poop bag so I can totally devote all my time
to playing Fallout. Not your dad.
Oh, good times.
Don't you have a girlfriend now?
Well, I mentioned that she would do it, but she might be listening to this too. I didn't want to bring that up.
I'm sorry.
You just wrecked the podcast again.
I still hate you, Jeremy.
I wasn't suggesting that she would do it. I'm saying, like,
You're not going to get out of that one.
No,
there's a hole in your stuff.
That hole doesn't need to be filled with video games.
Although so many
I
double entendres.
I have like 500 comic books that I haven't read.
Whatever. What do you got, Jeremy?
Oh, of course, cool.
Got something that's tickling me. So, I spent a lot of time sitting on my couch folding laundry and seething, and I used to do that.
Are those two things related, or is that because of the laundry, or they just happen concurrently?
Folding of the laundry, I think, soaks up some of the rage, and then the rage is just always there.
You should buy one of those things that folds the
like the Sheldon
the shirts
pack.
For you.
Yeah,
I got one of those. It's great.
I don't like
Does
devices.
Does it fold towels?
I'll have to mention that off pod because it's good.
You don't want to do product placement. So. I used to do, when we had cable, I used to sit and watch, like, MLB Network, and they would just show clips of baseball games. It was like or Star Trek The Next Generation. It's a great way to pass the time while I'm doing a boring task. But we recently got Netflix, and rather than watching Daredevil, which is the whole reason I got it, I've been watching anything but that. And one thing that has occupied my time, and is a good way of just sort of filling some time when I don't feel like doing anything else, was Mad Ron's Previews from Hell. It's a compilation of old exploitation and horror previews. I think it was released sometime in the 80s. There's some really bad comedy bits with this ventriloquist that you can't understand who sort of introduces the previews. And it's just all previews from like 60s and 70s and maybe some from the 80s of horror movies like Three on a Meat Hook, I Dismember Mama, I Drink Your Blood, I Eat Your Skin, Flesh Feast, Lady Frankenstein, and The Wizard of Gore. And sometimes with those kinds of movies, you don't really need to see the movie. The preview is enough. It's just someone saying, like, the producers of this film have asked us to not show you any footage because you could die and go crazy. And that's just wonderful. And it's a good way of passing the time.
Yeah, Belcourt does that sort of thing at the 12 Hours of Terror.
Yeah.
Between movies, they'll show, like, previews of other movies that are just like, you know, The Night Evelyn Rose from the Grave.
Yeah.
Look, they had
sorority
that
house massacre.
They had a one night a midnight movie of nothing but trailers.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
And I went.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you went to
this is like an hour and a half worth, and it's wonderful. Because, like I said, like sometimes those movies aren't really good. It's just like a couple of scenes, and then they'll show part of that scene in the preview, or like the preview is just like
done so well to make you want to see this piece of garbage, you know? And it's like, this is amazing.
Yeah, so. I remember the trailer for the Exorcist sequel, The Heretic.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And the trailer that they showed was just brilliant.
Yeah.
Just
really?
Off the charts, brilliant. And then I've never made it through the entire movie.
Yeah, I tried watching it once. I fell asleep like 20 minutes in or something.
Yeah. This is
That's one Richard Burton, right?
Right.
I mean, this sort of stuff is so much better than the In a World Where whatever. You know,
You get like 70s action movie guy.
Yeah.
Action.
Well, especially suspects. When it's like this sort of fake public service announcement of like, we recommend that no one under the age of 16 see this film. If you have a heart condition, the producer will ask you, please. There's one that the whole thing is just some guy in a straitjacket, like, staring and laughing hysterically. And they're saying, like, how if you see this movie, you might go mad. And so the producers have taken out an insurance policy to where you can be locked up in an insane asylum for the rest of your natural life if you go crazy watching, you know, like, Gore Beast or whatever. It's just,
The Sun Demon.
So good. So
that's a good flick.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I don't know.
We would believe you.
Yeah, I know. You would totally BS us right now.
This isn't really a correction, it's more of an addendum. The smart bitch... Hey, you dingus.
Smart bitches.
The smart bitches trashy book is called Beyond Heaving Bosoms. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to check that out, we've talked about it on the podcast before. Something of an aside, I did correct the Wikipedia entry about Deadmau5.
All right.
In my opinion... Skrillex is an EDM act. If there's a Deadmau5 fan out there that feels strongly about it and they change the article back, that's okay. And the article, too, that they referenced was not about the fact that he was the first EDM act, just that he was headlining this year. And Skrillex had headlined before. And I just was saving this the whole episode, I have to say it now. Because I am old... Every time I read Deadmau5's name, I read it as Deadmau5.
Deadmau5?
I do Deadmau5. I was like, who's Deadmau5? Who's
Deadmau5? You guys, you know.
Wow. It's weird.
I didn't know I was so elite compared to you guys.
Well, it's kind of weird because...
L33T.
I had an AOL account.
if some of the other letters were changed too, I probably would... I think it's because it's the only one that's changed and it's the last letter.
Mm-hmm. Add AIM and ICQ.
When I saw Joe Hill's Nosferatu the first time, I was like,
oh, somebody had to tell me that one. Yeah,
what?
That would confuse me forever. Until somebody's like, it's Nosferatu. Yeah. Like, oh, right.
Oh, it is.
Well,
that.
Sure it is.
Also.
Totes.
Yeah.
I got that one as soon as I saw it. And then, you know, another sort of aside, the bit about Bonnaroo versus CMA was, of course, stolen from...
Quentin Tarantino. Pulp Fiction.
It was from Pulp Fiction.
The Beatles and Elvis thing.
Yeah, it was from Pulp Fiction in the famous scene where...
Uma Thurman?
The male lead, the very
John Travolta
and Uma Thurman.
Vincent Vega.
We're in the restaurant having the first date, and she pulls the same spiel, but it's Elvis versus Beatles. You have to pick one, and it tells you the person that you are. And were there any other corrections?
When Mike referred to the song Axel F, Crystal hummed Herbie Hancock's Rocket. And I'm pretty sure that someone started to say, that's not Axel F. And I was like, wait, that's Rocket. But I didn't know what Axel F was. I didn't realize it was the theme to Beverly Hills Cop. I just thought I thought that was called Theme to Beverly Hills Cop.
No, it's called Axel F.
So it's called Axel F. Faltermeyer.
Ah.
So, which Mike and I both hummed the right one, if you were listening correctly.
Yeah,
we were a little bit not in sync.
Crystal was correct. She was overpowering the mix.
Mike doesn't do music. So.
Yeah. I know nothing about this, but you go music.
Yeah, he had the wrong tempo, I think.
I was going to correct that because that's temperature and not time, right?
No, wait.
Or is it time and not temperature?
So now, tempo is time.
Right.
Yes.
I want to know now how high Herbie Hancock's rocket charted, because maybe that's why she was.
Well, while Brian is typing away, I too have corrections. I pulled an Amanda, never actually mentioned the name of the Chemical Brothers video that Michelle Gondry directed. It's called Go. The video was made to promote their upcoming album, Born in the Echoes. Oh boy.
Corrections to the corrections! Mike did actually mention the name of the song, though he did not mention the name of the album.
And I also thought that I had mentioned that I did not pay attention to what Brian said, which happens a lot on the show, and about Shoney's and country. I thought he meant Shoney's and rock and roll. Shoney's is not very rock, but incredibly country. I had their breakfast buffet last year, and it had the same stuff it had in the 80s. I'm sure 30 years from now, it'll have the same safe, bland food.
It was probably the same, same food.
Maybe
the
same exact food. Not the exact same food.
You know, maybe the same powdered eggs. And
I tell you what, man, those they had with, like, French toast sticks.
Yeah, yeah, those were those.
Those were.
I had those last year.
Serious.
Maybe the same ones. Yeah, if you put them in enough syrup, they get rehydrated.
Hell yeah.
It's like we don't want the episodes from 1 week to end. I also would say this, like, I was saving this joke and kind of tying them together. It's like, after Bonnaroo, you go and ask your dad for more money. But if you went to CMA Fest, you were there with your dad. Is that okay?
Oh,
works
like
out
that.
Okay. All right.
Nice.
It's all good.
Very nice.
Okay. Rocket only got to 71 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100.
But the music video was very, very popular.
Extremely influential piece of music, Rocket, yes, by Herbie Hancock. For more information about that particular piece of music and Shoney's menu, probably you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
Waterloo.
Waterloo. Da, 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 da,
da, da, da. Are we going to see period?
Are we going to spin that at all?
Na, na, na. Are
we going to spin that at all?
I'm not talking about Waterloo. I just think Mike should just sing.
Regency. Regency.
Regency.
Did Jim Morrison provide inspiration for the Dazed and Confused character? Is that true?
Getting ready for that role, the first night, I went up for a dress rehearsal and hair and makeup, and I stepped out of the trailer, and Rick Linklater, the director, comes up and goes, "This is great. Look like Wooderson. This is great." And he goes, "Listen, man, I know you're not supposed to work tonight, but we got a scene at the Top Notch. It's Friday night. You know, I think Wooderson might be there, you know, trolling for chicks or what have you, you know what I mean?" And he goes, I go, "Yeah, he would be there." And he goes, "What do you think? Would Wooderson maybe be attracted to the redheaded intellectual? You know, because Wooderson's been around school. He's kind of been with all the typical beauties. What about the redheaded intellectual? You think he'd be into that?" I was like, "Yeah." And I said, "Give me 30 minutes. Let me take a walk." And he goes, "Okay." So I took a walk. Come back. We played verbal ping pong. I told him my ideas, and he told me his. And he goes, "Want to shoot it?" I went, "Okay." So, boom, we go up to the set. I get in the car, and I'm like, I'm nervous. First scene ever on film. And right before we're about to shoot, I've got friends in the car. I'm going, I've been listening to this live Doors album. And there's this, in between two of the songs, Morrison goes, "All right, all right, all right, all right." You ever heard that recording?
Of course.
Right? The four. "All right, all right, all right, all right." So right before we're about to go, I'm like, "What is Wooderson? What is Wooderson about? What's he about?" And I go, "Man, he's about four things. He's about, you know, his car. He's about getting high. He's about rock and roll and picking up chicks." And I go, "I'm in my car. I'm high as a kite. I'm listening to rock and roll. Action. And there's the chick. All right, all right, all right."
That's amazing.
3 out of 4.
That's fantastic.